Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One guy's played 10 games. Eddie's played 10 games and was poor in his last outing. Let's not kid ourselves, right? There's 16 shots, 4 went in. Not good enough. Look at his numbers in the league. They're not good enough. I don't think it's much of a competition. I think we've got a guy who's well ahead of the other guy. That's what I see. And the numbers back that up. So when he gets in again, you better play. You better earn some respect from your teammates. Your teammates are out there working their bag off. You better get some saves. And a timely save at the right time. Wouldn't hurt.
Carolina Hurricanes head coach Bill Peters, speaking frankly and honestly about the performance of Hurricanes goaltender Eddie Lack.
I wonder who they're going to protect in the expansion draft.
Or lack thereof performance of Eddie Lack. Don't often hear a head coach speak all that honestly to that degree when a player is struggling. We're thankful for it because it, of course, gives us something to talk about here on the program. But that was certainly some pointed commentary from Bill Peters about Eddie Lack. For the record, here's Eddie Lack's numbers this year. He's started 8 games. He's 2-4-2 in those 8 games. He's got an .873 save percentage and a .333 goals against average. So clearly, Eddie Lack is not had a good season for the Hurricanes. And this is a guy who the Hurricanes, not that many years ago, traded, if I recall correctly, a second-round pick to acquire because they thought he was likely to be the goaltender of the future there in Carolina. You have a problem with Bill Peters' comments about Eddie Lack?
I mean, I'm surprised that he was really throwing him under the bus like that. I mean, that was critical, Drew, to say the least. And I mean, he's basically saying he's having an awful year. No, he wasn't basically saying that. He was saying he's having an awful year and certainly an awful game. So, I mean, he's the coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. I don't have a problem with it. Eddie Lack probably has a problem with it, and he's got 1 year left on his contract. And I wouldn't say that he's a goalie that Las Vegas is knocking on the door to select. But Cam Ward, as you mentioned, Cam Ward's played 50 games and Lack's only played in 8 and he hasn't been good enough. And you know, you talk about when he was traded, and you know, he was a guy that started his pro career with the Manitoba Moose, and he's been a guy that has never really developed into that starting goaltender I think that some people thought he was going to develop into. And you look at Eddie Lack and he's got the size, he's got the mobility, but he's really struggled at the NHL level. And, you know, he put up some decent years with the Vancouver Canucks, more so in a kind of a third goalie role, Drew, because you had Luongo and Schneider there.
Well, when Carolina acquired him, they acquired him from Vancouver, and it came off a year that he played, you know, that he started 35 games.
Yep.
So a good number of games, a decent sample size, 2.45 goals against average, .921 save percentage. That's the goalie that the Hurricanes thought they were acquiring
two seasons ago, and he's
never gone anywhere close to that.
Right, and he wasn't good last year either.
No, but 901 save percentage.
The Hurricanes, yeah, and I mean, you could look at those save percentages and all day long, and it's not good enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Hurricanes haven't been a very good team. They've been better this year, but they're still last place in the East, even though the East is a better conference this year. So he's a guy that they will have to reevaluate and say, is this a buyout situation? Are we going to trade him? Because I don't think Vegas is going to take him in the expansion draft, Drew.
No.
There's better goaltenders that they can take.
There's been no reason for them to want Eddie Lack given the numbers he's put up this year. And I say that, you know, all due respect. You know, he's a guy, he's making, you know, $2.75 million. I can't imagine Carolina, given their financial struggles and the uncertainty around the ownership, would be in a position to buy out anybody.
Yeah, and, you know, Eddie Lack is a likable guy. He's always got a smile on his face. And you know, you almost wonder, you know, Carolina's won one of their last 10 games. This is really Bill Peters taking out, I think, his frustrations on Eddie Lack. And, I mean, this Hurricanes team, you remember, guys, 3 or 4 weeks ago, looked like they were maybe going to stay in the playoff race and compete with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Florida Panthers and the New York Islanders. But, you know, they lost last night to the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, you're losing to the Arizona Coyotes, you know your season is over.
Mm-hmm.
But their season was over a couple of weeks ago But certainly a month ago, they were playing some pretty good hockey. So for me, that's Bill Peters just taking out his frustrations on Eddie Lack. And you don't like to see that, but he did it.
Of the 60 goaltenders who have played 10 or more games this year, Eddie Lack ranks 60th. I mean, he's got the absolute bottom save percentage in the entire NHL of goalies who've played 10 or more games. 873 is his save percentage. I mean, Michael Hutchinson, who has certainly gone through his struggles here in Winnipeg, has a save percentage that's 21 points higher than Eddie Lack's.
You know, guys, I'll say this much. I don't really like it because it's through the media. That's what I don't really like about it. I think it was, I would say, a little bit too harsh. This Hurricanes team is not playing well as a group. Right? So it's not all on Eddie Lack, just like it's not all on Michael Hutchinson or Connor Hellebuck when the Jets lose. Right? There's 20 guys on the ice.
Yeah, it's not all on him, but it's, I think, clear what Bill Peters is saying is he needs more from him. He needs more timely saves. He needs just a better performance than what they've been getting.
Yeah, but
out
I don't think
Eddie
you do
Lack.
That in the media, Drew.
I don't disagree.
I think you do that in the dressing room or you do that in practice.
I think the timing and the method of delivery is uncouth? Is that the right word I'm looking for here, Dave?
Well, I mean, the fact is he gave an honest answer. He was asked a question and he gave a response. Now, you know, it's ironic that we're criticizing someone for being honest because, you know, we want that and we get mad when we hear nothing but platitudes from folks and we don't hear anything of substance. And we hear that and we think to ourselves, okay, great, they're giving us a bunch of fluff. Can you actually give me something that actually means something, you know, as opposed to what Bill Peters did? So now Bill Peters actually says something, and I don't disagree with Ezzy. I think it's right. I don't necessarily think that that's something you do through the media. But, I mean, clearly he's doing it to motivate the player. And I suspect he's had conversations with Eddie Lack in private and hasn't been able to motivate him. And let's be realistic. First of all, we're talking about a not very good Carolina team. I mean, mm-hmm. They're the last in the East. So sure, Ez is right that they were, you know, looking somewhat respectable about a month ago. But the fact is, and we're talking about a guy who's a backup goaltender right now. I mean, Cam Ward is the number one in Carolina. Eddie Lack is played 8 games, or I think he's played in 9 games, but he started in 8 games. So, I mean, it's ironic. I get that Peters is frustrated, but you can't say that your season has lived and died because Eddie Lack hasn't been, you know, making these lights out saves. I mean, you've given him 8 games. So, I mean, let's go on the premise that he wins all 8 games. I mean, it's obviously not going to happen, but, you know, you're in a playoff spot, you know, or you're touching one. But, I mean, again, you need to be a better team. So
it reminds me of, remember, I think it was year one. It was either year one or year two of the Jets when Eric Fair was still a member of the team. And Claude Noel had some very pointed comments for Eric Fair after practice. It was, I think, a sleepy Sunday morning practice or something. And Claude Noel, you know, Eric Fair was struggling. It was clear he was still injured after the shoulders and everything else. And he sort of hadn't regained the form that he eventually found to some degree when he went back to Washington and Pittsburgh. And Claude Noel had some very pointed comments about Eric Fair and made him to the media. And I sort of always remembered that one as the one of the only times really recently where I can remember either Claude Noel or Paul Maurice sort of really criticizing a player to that extent.
Yeah, well, Drew, it's one thing to say my goaltender had a bad game, but it's another thing to embarrass a player. And I think, you know, Eddie Lack was embarrassed there. And the way I look at it, you know, he's already having a bad year. And, you know, you go on national TV or at the very least local television. I'm not sure where that was broadcast.
It was on NHL.com and it went like wildfire because you don't hear a coach speak
like
that.
And everything goes wildfire because you have Twitter and Facebook and all that. So
I don't think it
helps your goaltender at all because now you have a guy. How does he recover from this now? He knows that you have no confidence in him because you've gone on TV and said that. So I just think Bill Peters maybe could have exercised a little discretion there.
I would agree with your comments there. As an update from MTS Center, where we know that there's not going to be a formal game day skate for the Winnipeg Jets, but an old friend is on the ice skating this morning at MTS Center.
Jim Slater?
Tyler Myers.
Nice.
Tyler Myers back skating at MTS Center alongside Nick Patan, Mark Stewart, and Michael Hutchinson.
The Black Aces.
The Black Aces, three guys who did not, I guess Hutchinson dressed. Patan and Stewart were healthy scratches. But most importantly, most of note to Winnipeg Jets fans, Tyler Myers, number 57, haven't seen him since November 11th. He is skating this morning.
It's good news.
At MTS Center. Maybe you see him back in the next couple weeks. Maybe you see him back before the end of the season. Be interesting just to see if he can get some games under his belt. See how that changes, you know, if that gives the Jets comfort in that he'll be healthy for next season and they don't have to, and they can protect him in the expansion draft. Food for thought. But Tyler Myers, one more time, skating at MTS Center this morning. We'll hear more about his status, I assume, later on today before the Jets and the Avalanche meet tonight at 6 p.m. at MTS Center. When we come back, we're going to look at the Atlantic Division and what they did at the trade deadline. We didn't get to that on Wednesday's NHL This Week show, so we'll get to it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Rory's snapping pictures.
Yeah, I got to put up the pictures to make sure that there's a nice photo accompanying the show on the website. Of course, that website is illegalcurve.com. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli, they got the big screen TVs, five big screen TVs, drink specials, food specials, all sorts of great things happening at Bernstein's Deli. Check it out in the Cordon Village Mall.
I'm going to go pick up some matzo ball soup with the stomach flu I've been experiencing.
Well, Pastor Lauren, I don't know if you've seen it, he sent you a tweet saying he hopes you feel better.
I love Pastor Lauren.
Yeah, Pastor Lauren, of course, is the Winnipeg Jets pastor. Hey, Ezzy, it's good to hear your voice. Glad you are feeling better. Praying for your complete recovery.
So Lauren's a beauty.
Big thanks to Pastor Lauren for
giving us a shout out. I appreciate that, Lauren. I'm feeling better.
Maybe his prayers helped you.
Yesterday, I actually missed the first goal because I was in the bathroom.
Yes.
And it wasn't very pleasant.
No, you weren't feeling well, and we're glad to see you were able to
rally.
Well,
it's been going around.
Well, I'm hoping to avoid you entirely.
Drew and I kept a wide berth between Ezzy and us.
Is the flu airborne, or is that...
With you, we're not sure.
I don't know. You might have the bird flu.
We called the CDC to find out exactly what you have.
You've been diagnosed with rickets. Congratulations. I'm not sure.
Am I going to actually be at the MTS Center tonight watching the game, and I'm actually going to be quarantined in one of those plastic
No question. 100%.
Squares.
We've requested that happen.
Actually requested that regardless of whether you were sick or not, but this is just more justification.
We actually have somebody on guard to just spray you down with Windex at all times in case you get a little bit out of hand.
Call it or Perry.
I think that's the first time I've ever had to leave a Jets game.
Well, you weren't feeling well, and we appreciate that we did send you home and said go home, feel better, so you can be here this morning. And you've done okay today.
I didn't like it because I have FOMO, right? I don't want to miss anything at the Jets games.
Yeah.
You know, if you guys are making some jokes up there, I don't want to miss anything. Yeah, but I had to go. I mean, I was puking. So
yeah, my 17-month-old daughter also has FOMO, and she doesn't take naps at daycare. It's almost the same thing.
Almost.
Let's talk about the Atlantic Division, their trade deadline recap. We start, of course, with the Montreal Canadiens. They are in first place in the Atlantic Division, and they were quite busy over the course of the deadline on Wednesday and the few days leading up. They acquired the following players. They went big. Jordy Benn from the Dallas Stars, Brandon Davidson from the Edmonton Oilers, Steve Ott from the Detroit Red Wings, Dwight King from the Los Angeles Kings, and Andreas Martinsson from the Colorado Avalanche.
No joke, Drew. Every single one of those players is 6'2 or taller.
Yeah, they went very big.
What's Jordy Benn? I think Jordy Benn's 6'2 as well.
He's a big, big, physical, rugged defenseman. In exchange for all those players, they gave up defenseman Greg Patterin and a fourth-round pick in 2017. They gave up forward David Desharnais. They gave up a sixth-round pick in 2018. They gave up a fourth-round pick in 2018. That's conditional. And they gave up Sven Andrighetto. So the Canadiens were active. Are they any better as a result of these trades than they were before?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew. And, what they needed most was secondary scoring. And we know how good of a season Max Pacioretty's had. We know how good of a season Alex Radulov has had. To me, the guy that is key for that team is Alex Galchenyuk. If the Montreal Canadiens are going to go anywhere in the playoffs, Alex Galchenyuk has to elevate his game. But as far as the moves went, I mean, Dwight King is a guy. He scored 15 goals in the NHL before. He's a third or fourth line guy. For the Montreal Canadiens, I know that he's been playing on that fourth line with Michael McCarron and Torrey Mitchell. My biggest problem with the Montreal Canadiens has also been that they can't move the puck quick enough out of their own zone. You look at the defensemen they have, Shea Weber, Andre Markov, Alexei Emelin. Jeff Petrie's probably actually their best puck-rushing defenseman. And for this Montreal Canadiens team, to answer your question, I don't know how much better they've got, because this Canadiens team has not been good in the last 30, 35 games after getting off to that 13-1-1 start in their first 15 games. But that's really what it comes down to.
The five
Drew.
Players not, they acquired
right.
have totaled a grand total of 7 goals this season.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you're talking about when you're talking about Jordy Benn and you're talking about Brandon Davidson, those are third pairing guys.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody's going to say that those two guys, maybe Brandon Davidson has a bit of an upside to be a second pairing defenseman, but Jordy Benn, Jamie Benn's brother, of course, I mean, he's a good, solid stay-at-home defenseman. Jordy Benn kind of, he's like a throwback to like a Craig Ludwig for me. That's who Jordy Benn reminds me of. So he's a solid defenseman, but again, the foot speed is not there, and that's the issue I've had with this Habs team for most of the year, and the fact that guys like Thomas Plekanec have not had very good offensive years. Brendan Gallagher and Alex Galchenyuk had some injury problems earlier. They've taken a while to get going. Certainly, you know, when you think about the Habs a couple of years ago, when Gallagher and Galchenyuk were providing the primary offense. So if they don't get that, Drew, this team's not going to go anywhere. So these are depth pieces. They needed to get bigger. They needed to add some depth defensemen. But as far as if this is going to make them good enough to compete with the Washington Capitals, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the New York Rangers, the elite teams of the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, the answer is
no. I don't think it has.
No, I agree with you there. The Ottawa Senators are second in the Atlantic Division. They were also active. They acquired Alex Burrows from the Vancouver Canucks. They also signed him to a 2-year, $5 million contract extension, $2.5 million per season. They acquired Victor Stahlberg from the Carolina Hurricanes, and they acquired Jyrki Jokipaka and a second-round pick in 2017 from the Calgary Flames.
Best name in hockey.
It is a good name. In exchange, the big one is they give up prospect Jonathan Dahlin, a second-round pick from 2016, who's having a nice year in Sweden. They gave up a third-round pick in 2017 for Victor Stahlberg, and they gave away Curtis Lazar and Mike Koska in exchange for Jyrki Jokipaka and the second-round pick. Interesting moves by the Senators. I think a lot of people had their eyebrows raised over the Dahlin trade for Alex Burrows.
Well, Jonathan Dahlin is a second rounder from this past 2016 draft. He's a good player. And, you know, Alex Burrows, you mentioned, Drew, signed the 2-year contract. He had 2 goals the other night for the Ottawa Senators. So he's a guy that you acquire because you acquire him for the playoffs. And, you know, you sign him to a 2-year deal, which I was a little bit surprised by, to be honest with you. But this Ottawa Senators team, to me, again, they're a good team, but I don't know if I would put them up there with the elite teams in the Eastern Conference. Like, in the first round, I don't know if I'm taking Ottawa over any other team, just because I don't know how deep they are. And these are depth acquisitions. Victor Stahlberg is a guy that you're going to most likely play on your third or fourth line. They had Alex Burrows up on the top line with Kyle Turris and Mike Hoffman, but that's because Burrows has the versatility to play either wing, and he can play on your first line, second line, or third line. So good acquisitions, but again, when you're talking about the Capitals, the Penguins, the Rangers, these are some of the best teams in the entire league. I don't know if these acquisitions necessarily put them over the top so they can go on a lengthy playoff run.
I think the Senators will be in a good position to win one round. I think by finishing second in the Atlantic Division, you're going to get either the Bruins or you're going to get who's third right now? You're going to get the Bruins. I think the Senators could beat the Bruins in the first round, but I don't know if their ceiling is much more than that.
Yeah, and I mean, Senators fans were going out of their minds with the trade of, you know, Ulf Dahlin's son.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought that he was a really nice piece to the puzzle that would be, you know, good in the future. A lot of people were already kind of going out of their minds saying, you know, this is the Martin Erat for Philip Forsberg type deal. But, you know, Alex Burrows, as he said, had 2 goals in his debut. And the GM had a mandate from the owner. He said, get us into the playoffs. Now, will this get them into the playoffs? Probably they're going to most likely be in the playoffs the way they've been playing anyways. But, you know, they want to win now. I suspect he wants to make some money, playoff money. So he doesn't want to have to take a chance at not making the playoffs this year, considering he's only 2 points up on the Bruins and 4 points up on the Leafs. So you got to think that the Senators had to do – they did a little bit of tweaking. Again, I wouldn't put them in any position to knock off any of those Metro teams in a series. So I think, maybe you can beat one of the teams in the Atlantic, but you're not beating a team in the Metro. So this is a good enough for a first round.
I just don't know if Ottawa scores enough goals. That's my issue with this team. And they've played a lot better defensively under Guy Boucher, and that's because we know, Drew, Guy Boucher is a defense-first coach. Mm-hmm. So he's made Erik Karlsson, I think, into a better defenseman. His point totals have suffered a little bit, but you look up and down that lineup, and how many game breakers does this team have? I mean, maybe Mark Stone and Mike Hoffman, throw in Kyle Turris in there. Derek Brassard hasn't had a very good year.
No, that was a bad – I mean, that looked like a bad trade. It was a curious trade when that happened in the offseason, giving up a young Mika Zibanejad for Derek Brassard, and it really doesn't look any better at this point in the season.
Well, I think it's a wash. I don't necessarily know that Zibanejad's ceiling is maybe as high as people thought it was when he was drafted in 2011. He's a good player.
Still only 23 years old or whatever.
Sure, but I mean, right now you would say it's pretty much a wash. We'll have to wait and see what happens as Zibanejad develops. But I mean, it's a good defensive team. Dion Phaneuf has had an underrated year. We know Mark Methot is a very solid defenseman, but I just don't know in a 7-game series if they have enough game breakers.
The Boston Bruins, they made one acquisition. That was Drew Stafford of the Winnipeg Jets. We talked about that, obviously, extensively on Wednesday. No real risk from the Bruins' perspective. It could become a fourth-round pick if they actually do anything in the playoffs, but you're talking about a relatively negligible draft pick for a guy who's a veteran player. I think he's slotted in on the Bruins' third line today as the Bruins get into action. In Toronto, they were busy. They acquired Brian Boyle from the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for Byron Freeze and a second-round pick in 2017. The Free Frankie movement finally came to an end. They traded Frankie Corrado to the Penguins in exchange for Eric Fair, Steve Alexi, and a fourth-round pick in 2017. This Leafs team they made a couple minor moves to try and get into the playoffs. They've struggled on this West Coast road trip. I think they'll be in tight right down to the wire to be one of the final teams to make it or not make it in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, Drew, their next game is on Tuesday at home to the Detroit Red Wings, who we obviously know are not going to be going to the playoffs for the first time in 25 years. But I like the moves they made. We knew that the Toronto Maple Leafs were not going to make major moves, but Brian Boyle is a very interesting move to me, because now up the middle, you've got Austin Matthews, Tyler Bozak, Nazem Kadri, and Brian Boyle.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Very good.
And
that's how you build a good team, is right up the middle.
The key, though, again, for this team to get into the playoffs is secondary scoring. And we've seen, if Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander aren't leading the offense, this team has really struggled. So, they've struggled to keep the puck out of the net. Freddie Anderson, I would say he's had a decent year, but he's been up and down. Yeah. So, again,
With a young and inexperienced defense in front of him, I think he's given the Leafs everything they could ask for, I think.
Right, and you've got Alexei Marchenko into the lineup now, and I think Nikita Zaitsev has actually had a very good year for a guy that was undrafted. They signed in the offseason, but it's going to be tough because the Islanders are surging. The two teams I would really look out for are the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning lost last night, but they've been really coming on here, so it's going to be a great race for that last wild card spot in the East.
You keep talking up the Lightning, and I understand why, and for good reason, because they are the Lightning, and everyone thought that they were a Stanley Cup contender this season. I just, they seem to take one step forward, two steps back. It's hard for them to really get much momentum going. That was a big loss last night to the Penguins, and they still have three teams in front of them just to get to the playoff spot. So the Lightning really need to step on it, and quickly to do so. Speaking of the Lightning, they were very busy. They acquired Peter Budaj, Eric Chernak, a seventh round pick, and a conditional draft pick in exchange for Ben Bishop and a fifth round pick. I mentioned the Byron Freeze and a second round pick for Brian Boyle. A trade of AHL goaltenders Mike McKenna from Adam Wilcox. They acquired Mark Streit from the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for Valtteri Filppula, fourth round pick in 2017, and a seventh round pick in 2017. And then they flipped Mark Streit to Pittsburgh in exchange for another fourth round pick. I think what Steve Yzerman did that was is he freed up some cap space, and he freed up some roster moves for the upcoming expansion.
All of
draft.
Those moves were to free up cap space.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think he did a great job. And we knew that Ben Bishop wasn't going to be re-signed. And that's because the Lightning have other guys that they have to re-sign in the offseason. Tyler Johnson, I believe, is one of them.
Tyler Johnson, Jonathan Drouin, they're both going to be RFAs. Andre Palat, also an RFA. Be interesting to see if they can hold on to all of those forwards. It seems like they'd be tough to do so.
Right, so you're a seller because Brian Boyle's not coming back next year. It'll be interesting to see if the Toronto Maple Leafs re-sign Brian Boyle, because you heard that Edmonton was interested in Brian Boyle, and he's a guy that can be a great third or fourth line center for any team, in my opinion. So, you know, I like the moves that they made, because they made those moves and they can still be competitive this year and going ahead next year. Because this year, let's be honest, it could be a lost year for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Steven Stamkos is going to come back eventually. But Bishop wasn't part of the long-term future. Andre Vasilevsky is going to be the goalie of the future. And Peter Budaj, I think, can still be a capable backup for Andre Vasilevsky. So the Lightning, as you mentioned, Drew, I mean, their chances of getting into the playoffs are not good. And that is mainly because of the way they've played for the majority of the year. They've come on here lately winning 6 of their last 10, 6-2-2. But it's going to be tough for them. But certainly, if you know that you're not going to bring back some of these pending UFAs, why not trade them?
And that's what they did. Steve Yzerman is a smart general manager at the very least. Drew Spivak is the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. He covers the Colorado Avalanche. He joins us next to discuss the Winnipeg Jets opponent this evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 12.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you here in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Drew Spivak. Drew is the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. He covers the Colorado Avalanche in Denver. Drew, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. How you guys doing today?
All right, we're doing well, Drew. Thanks very much for joining us. How excited are you, Drew, for what's this? This is March. June is how many months away? About 5 months away, give or take? 4 months away? How excited are you for
June,
another...
It's 3 months away.
All of March, all of April, all of May. Okay, fine. 3-4 months away, whatever.
Hold on, Drew. Do we need to get you a calendar here?
I'm good. How excited are you for another 3 or 4 months of Duchesne and Landeskog speculation?
Let's see. I'm going to go with not excited at all. Actually, probably not as excited as I am to watch the rest of the regular season for the Avalanche. It's, you know, the next month and a half or so. It's one of those things where it's been speculated, especially with Duchesne, for, gosh, I think the last maybe year and a half or so at least. And we heard nonstop rumors about Duchesne, especially coming up to the trade deadline. And so I know it's going to be coming up over the next few months until something happens one way or the other. And so, yeah, not really looking forward to that so much anymore. I just kind of want something to happen just for the sake of, like, let's get it over with and done with so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Drew, we're having a bit of a staticky reception, so what we're going to do is we're going to call you back and we'll get you on hopefully with a better connection. So we're going to call you back in 2 seconds, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Rory, producer Rory, is going to call Drew back because the line was a little bit fuzzy, as you no doubt heard there. But
it's that mountain air. That's the problem.
It's the thin air, the high altitude and the thin air in Denver.
Sounded a little echoey.
A little, maybe tinny? Was it tinny?
It sounded a little tinny.
There's a little tinny there to the to the comments.
A little tinny tinge.
Yeah, we'll get Drew, a little Tintin, if you will, if you enjoyed.
Rin-tin-tin?
No, Tintin, the books.
I know, Rin-tin-tin.
There was nothing to do with Tintin. Rin-tin-tin was completely different
than
Tintin.
No, Rin-tin-tin's the dog.
I know, but not in Tintin. Snowy is the dog in Tintin.
Okay, Drew, you're taking it too seriously.
Captain Haddock, I like Tintin books growing up.
Was that
up.
Like Ovid Video?
I'm pretty sure Drew Tintin was from like the 40s.
So I know, but you. It was,
has he? Confirm that? I'm pretty sure Tintin was from the 40s.
I don't think Ezzy knows what Tintin is.
I remember Tintin.
Do you remember Tintin?
Yeah, it was a cartoon in the 1980s.
Well, it actually was, I think you're right, Dave, from originally like the 50s. It was, what is it, Dutch?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Dutch.
The Adventures of Tintin.
That's right. Yeah. The Adventures of Tintin and Captain Haddock. And we have Drew? No, we're going to keep working on getting Drew. Anyway, so the Jets and the Avalanche this afternoon, or tonight rather, at MTS Center, moving away from the conversation about a 1950s cartoon book. But we talked about it earlier in the program, and it is a game that the Jets really need to jump on the Avalanche quickly and early and really, you know, let's crush their gentle spirit for if we're going to engage in a lot of dramatic conversation there. That's going to be the key for the Jets tonight, is to be jumping on the Avalanche quickly and often tonight. Drew Spivak, the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast, joins us now again from a better phone connection, is my understanding. Drew, thanks again.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry about that, guys.
There we go.
And now we can hear your nice dulcet tones.
Yeah, Drew, you know, we were talking about the Colorado Avalanche and, you know, talking about some of the moves that weren't made. What did you think of what Joe Sakic did prior to the trade deadline, moving Jerome Iginla? He moved Andreas Martinsson. I guess, was that what you were expecting from the Avalanche, not a big move like trading Matt Duchene or Gabe Landeskog?
Yeah, I think it kind of played out as expected. I guess in a way I'm a little bit surprised that there was a market for Jerome Iginla, because I know I've talked with you guys before and kind of just been looking at the way Iginla's played throughout the season. I mean, you can definitely tell that he doesn't have a lot left in the tank anymore. I mean, he's still got the big shot, and that's about the kind of, I think, the main thing that he brings to the table at this point. So I was a bit surprised that they were able to find somebody that would be willing to take him on for the rest of the season. And I know, you know, the Kings didn't really give up much, a conditional draft pick, I think, in next year's draft. So it wasn't a whole heck of a lot to give up for him. But Andreas Martinsson going to Montreal, you know, kind of a fourth liner type trade. I know the Avalanche got a little bit more speed in getting Andrew Ghetto from Montreal. But, you know, overall, I don't think it was a big splash either way. I wasn't surprised to see Duchene and Landeskog stay. I think that everybody kind of assumed that was going to be something that, if it does happen, it's going to happen more in the summertime. But I think the one thing that, not necessarily surprised me, but I think that kind of has everybody fired up around here, is the fact that they didn't do more. They weren't able to move some of the expiring contracts that they have in John Mitchell and Fedor Tootin and Rene Bork and guys like that, because I think you look at the trade deadline and see what the Avalanche needed to do was find a way to move those guys, bring up some of the younger guys from San Antonio, give them an opportunity to play in what's been a completely lost season for them. And the fact that they weren't able to do that, I think it speaks volumes about just kind of the ineptitude of this organization and where it's headed right now.
You know, Drew, that leads into my question, because we saw San Antonio here in Winnipeg playing the Manitoba Moose, and one of the players I was focused on was JT Compher, who formed part of the CCM line with Kyle Connor at University of Michigan. And he got his call-up, played with the Avalanche, made his debut. What are the thoughts about JT in Colorado right now?
I think there's some excitement just to see what the kid's got. I mean, you know, I know myself personally, I didn't get a chance to watch many San Antonio games this year, but I remember watching Michigan and thinking that this kid's got a decent future. And I think the hope around here is that he does have a good future, because he was a part of the Ryan O'Reilly to Buffalo trade and one of the big guys coming back in the return with Nikita Zadorov and Mikhail Grigorenko. So I think there's hope that he's going to be a decent player for this team, and they need him to be. And it's a good thing that they were able to finally call him up. I wish they would have been able to do more, bring up an A.J. Greer, maybe bring up Rocco Grimaldi and a couple other defensemen to see kind of what those guys have. But I think him getting an opportunity, you know, we'll see if he plays second, third line, I think, for this team, you know, the rest of the season. Hopefully he can kind of produce and kind of give some Avalanche fans hope that there's something in the future to kind of look forward to, at least in the near future.
Drew Spivak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew covers the Colorado Avalanche. He's the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. Drew, you mentioned the Ryan O'Reilly trade, and you know how much of that trade and what is clearly a win for the Buffalo Sabres in that trade, how much of that trade has sort of loomed over everything that's happened this season and maybe Joe Sakic's reticence to pull the trigger on a deal? Does losing that trade really sort of hang over the franchise at this point?
Yeah, I think it does. I think for the most part. I mean, it's still, I know people around here are kind of still in wait-and-see mode on this trade. I don't think people are willing to say that they lost the trade quite yet, but I think it's pretty clear at this point. Mikhail Grigorenko is not going to be what they were hoping he was going to be. You know, hopefully JT Compher can be. I think there's a lot of hope still for Nikita Zadorov, who really shined over the last month and a half until he ended up getting injured. and missing the rest of the season here. So he was really starting to kind of turn it on and think, okay, the Avalanche finally might have that number one defensive, or, you know, like first pairing defenseman guy to go along with Eric Johnson in that trade. But, you know, I think you look at that move and the way that, you know, Ryan O'Reilly's performed up in Buffalo, and I think a lot of people say, well, yeah, Joe Sakic is kind of hesitant to make another trade, and I can't really blame him at this point, because you look at most of the moves that Sakic has made over the course of his tenure here, a lot of them haven't really panned out the way that they wanted to. The direction of this organization right now just kind of shows that, hey, Joe Sakic probably isn't the man for the job at this point in time. So I think in a way it's kind of a good thing that the Avalanche didn't make any sort of a big splash, because I don't know if a lot of people really trust Joe Sakic to make the right move for Duchesne and or Landeskog to get the right return back for two guys that are pretty good talents in this league.
You know, Drew, you mentioned some of the moves that people are expecting to come in the offseason, whether that's trading both of Matt Duchesne or Gabriel Landeskog or one or either of them. When you look at the team, though, is there anybody on this team that is untouchable? Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and Tyson Jost? Or if the deal is right, would maybe the Avalanche look at moving one of those guys?
You know, Joe Sakic has said that MacKinnon Rantanen are untouchable guys right now. But I think any good general manager would look at it and say there are no true untouchables on any team. For the right price, maybe those guys could be had. But, you know, this is an organization right now that needs to figure out the direction. Where are they going? What is the plan moving forward? Are they going to go for a true rebuild, or are they going to just kind of try and build this thing on the fly? I don't think they really know what direction they want to go in at this point. I think Nathan MacKinnon's the guy that if they decide to move him, you absolutely could do it, and you could get a really nice return for him, but I'm not sure that that's the right idea. I think if they decide to trade a Matt Duchesne, that might be the better route, because this is a team that's probably 3 to 5 years at least from being truly competitive in the Western Conference. And you look at that time frame, you know, where Matt Duchesne is in his age right now, he's 26 years old, so you're looking at him being in his early 30s by the time this team is good again. So I think you can look at it and say that's probably a move that they should probably make to get a good return now while Matt Duchesne is still a valued player around the league, and pair some of these younger guys up with the Nathan MacKinnon, with the Mikko Rantanen. If you get a good return back for them, you have an opportunity to kind of build this thing a little bit quicker than you would otherwise.
Drew, is Semyon Varlamov the goalie of the future for this team? Like, he's 28 years old. He's played a number of years in the NHL. Do you see him as the guy that the Colorado Avalanche are going to be moving forward with next year? And if not, do they have anyone in the pipeline to bring up to fill that role?
Yeah, personally, I don't think he's the goaltender of the future. I mean, he had the one great year a couple years ago when the Avs made the playoffs, and of course, one of the better teams in hockey that season. He played out of his mind as a Vezina candidate and a Hart Trophy candidate. But since then, it's kind of been a steady decline, and it's hard to get a grasp on whether it's just, you know, the skills are declining overall, or if it's the injuries that he's dealt with, the groin injuries, the hip issues and stuff like that, that have really caused the decline in numbers. So I don't think they really know what they're going to do with him at this point, because they're kind of strung with this, you know, almost $6 million contract of his, and without the unclear future whether or not he's the true number one guy. So you look at the pipeline and what they've got coming. Calvin Pickard, this is a good opportunity for him over the last, you know, couple months here to figure out if he can be that guy for the future. And then they can make a decision maybe once it comes to the expansion draft, because they're going to probably have to expose one of those guys. I think you probably hope that they expose Varlamov just because of his contract. But, you know, other than Calvin Pickard, you look at the pipeline, you got Spencer Martin, you got Jeremy Smith. I don't think either one of those guys are the true answer. So I think the goaltending issue is something they're going to have to figure out, and it's just another thing where this franchise has to figure out where they're going here in the future.
Drew, I don't believe that the Avalanche have announced who the starting goaltender is going to be tonight, but do you expect it to be Calvin Pickard, and then maybe they go with Jeremy Smith in Colorado tomorrow against the Blues?
Yeah, that would be my guess. I think I did see a little bit ago that it's probably going to be Calvin Pickard tonight, and it probably should be, because he's played pretty well over the last, you know, 10, 15 games or whatnot, getting his save percentage up above 920 during that time frame. I think he's got it about 911 right now. So I would fully expect to see Calvin Pickard in goal tonight against the Jets.
Drew, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, it's been a struggle this year in Denver, to put it mildly. How would you evaluate the job Jared Bednar has done in his rookie year as an NHL head coach? I mean, sort of came in under odd situations with Patrick Waugh quitting, during a typically downtime in the NHL world. How would you evaluate the job that Jared Bednar has done with a clearly flawed roster?
Yeah, it's hard to figure out because, looking back at it, given the situation that occurred with it, like you just mentioned there, I liked the hire right off the bat. I thought he was a good fit, a guy that's worked his way up, throughout the hockey world, winning championships in the ECHL and then again in the AHL. I think he's got the resume and the pedigree to do a good job here. But like you mentioned, this is a roster that is so unbelievably flawed, and you've got guys that don't really kind of fit his system and what he wants to do. And one of the big guys in that, I think, is Tyson Barry. You look at him and how he struggled, especially offensively this year, not producing at the rate that we've seen from him over the last couple of years. I think he's one of those guys that you have to wonder whether he fits in Bednar's system overall. So it's hard to fully evaluate because I think he is a good coach. And I think he's done some good things. I think if you look at overall this season, yeah, it's been a massive disappointment. And this team is not scoring goals, I think, the rate they probably should be. But I think you've seen some changes defensively where this team is not nearly as bad defensively as they have been over the last couple of years. Yeah, they're still not great by any stretch of the imagination, but they're still not as bad as they have been defensively. So if they can figure out how to score goals and, use special teams, I think, to their advantage a little bit more, they might be all right in the future. So I think Bednar might be a guy that you can look at and say, all right, you give him a roster he can work with, then maybe we might be working with something here. But it was such a tough situation that he got thrown into. It's hard to fully evaluate what he's done so far.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche in Denver. He's the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. Drew, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Take care,
Absolutely,
Drew.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Let's head to break. When we return, we'll discuss trade deadline winners and losers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Declaring winners and losers on Trade Center, it's very premature. But let's start with the winners pool.
Washington Capitals. So they already had the superstars. They had the goalie. They had the coach. They had the supporting cast. It was put together very well through trades, through free agency, and through their own draft. But the reason they're the big winner today is they went out and got the best player, and they walked into that locker room and said, we just got the best player to add to the best team. Now it's all on you. We can't do it again. You have it in front of you right now. You've been built. Now go win a Stanley Cup.
That the winners and losers segment from TSN's Trade Center panel. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. I can assure you, anyone who purchased tickets to see Jay Farrow, ex of Saturday Night Live, this weekend at Rumors, is definitely a winner. Ezzy, you were there on Thursday night. How did you enjoy Jay Farrow?
Oh, it was amazing. He's probably, I would say, if not the best stand-up I've seen at Rumors. He's in the top three, and we've seen some pretty good stand-up comedians over the years. Dave Coulier, Rob Schneider, the list goes on and on and on, right? Mm-hmm. All the good comedians have been at Rumors. But, yeah, he was really funny. It's funny because we went to the 10:30 show, and I don't think we got out of there until quarter to one. Ryan Ash was the opener, as he usually is at Rumors, and he was great. He does impersonations better than anybody. Drake is one of the ones that he does that's really good, and Barack Obama, he calls him Barry O. And if you have tickets to see Jay Farrow tonight, you're not going to be disappointed.
Absolutely. And of course, Sean Wayans, tickets currently on sale to see him. He's coming April 20th through the 23rd. Those tickets are going to go quickly, so be sure to get those real quick at rumorscomedyclub.com. So winners and losers now that the trade center trade deadline has come and gone.
Thank God it's over.
It gives us something to talk about, Ezzy.
Yeah, but I want to talk about, the players and the games on the ice.
I hear you.
At a certain point, look, it's great, but
it gets a little ad nauseum.
You're talking about it for 2 months leading up to it, sometimes you just want it to end and you want to go back to the playoff races, right?
And we are in the midst of the playoff races. So one final segment about the trade deadline. Your winner, your loser. Who do you have as a winner from Wednesday and the few days leading up to Wednesday.
Well, we talked about this team earlier, Drew. I would say that the Tampa Bay Lightning are probably one of the big winners for me because they were able to move some of their pending UFAs and not really affect their ability to still be competitive in the playoff race. And right now, they're still in it, even though they're maybe an outside shot at getting in. They're still, you know, within striking distance of the playoff spot, so they're probably going to have to win 65-70% of their games to get in, but we know that this Lightning team has the ability to do that, right? So Tampa Bay was a winner for me. I thought the Vancouver Canucks were also a winner for me, you know, moving some of those guys that didn't factor into the long-term plans like Yannick Hansen or Alex Burrows, but also getting back top prospects. Nikolai Goldobin, a guy who I know that Dave has seen play with the San Jose Barracuda. He's a top prospect. And then you pick up Jonathan Dahlin from the Ottawa Senators, a second rounder in the 2016 draft for Alex Burrows, right, Drew? So I thought that the Vancouver Canucks did a good job. Would you have liked to have seen Ryan Miller traded? Sure. But it looked like that wasn't going to happen. It was pretty evident that that was not going to happen.
They seem like they want to re-sign him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I like what the Vancouver Canucks did. I like what the Leafs did as well. You know, you trade Frank Corrado, a defenseman who, you know, obviously wasn't playing that much in your lineup. So you pick up Eric Fehr and you get a draft pick, and then Brian Boyle gives you depth down the middle on the fourth line. So I like what the Leafs did as well.
I liked what the Red Wings did, trading Thomas Vanek. I mean, you know, he's an older player. You get a pick. I mean, you know, it's shocking to think that after 25 seasons in the playoffs, the Detroit Red Wings are sellers. But this looks like the year that they will, in fact, be not making the playoffs and looking to rebuild that team. So I like what the Red Wings did, you know, getting some, you know, bolstering their draft choices for the future. And I like the Penguins. I mean, we had Jason Botterill on earlier, and he talked about, you know, adding those defensemen. And we saw what Ron Hainsey was able to do. We saw what, you know, they were able to contribute immediately to that Penguins team. So I like the moves the Penguins did as well.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Vanek trade, Dave, because the Florida Panthers, as we know, they're competing for a playoff spot. They're trying to catch the New York Islanders right now.
And two I like points what, behind them currently.
Yeah, and I like what that says to the rest of your team. Thomas Vanek is a guy that's had a good season with the Red Wings, and you're saying that we're going to go for it here. And the Florida Panthers won the division last year. They could easily, you know, make up these points and get into the playoffs. And then, as you said, the Detroit Red Wings, they get Dylan McIlrath, a guy who, you know, is a depth defenseman. He's still fairly young, and they get a conditional third-round pick. So maybe you'd like to see the Red Wings trade some more players. They did trade Steve Ott, so I agree. The Red Wings did do pretty well. It's just you're not used to seeing them in a position where they're sellers.
Nobody wants to mention the Washington Capitals?
Well, I mean, they got the big fish, right?
And yeah.
Kevin Shattenkirk.
But the price they paid, was it too much? Do you think it was a very reasonable price that they paid?
I think you could argue that the St. Louis Blues didn't get enough. But Kevin Shattenkirk, again, as we know, Drew, is a rental, right? Just because he was traded to the Washington Capitals doesn't mean he's going to sign long-term with the Washington Capitals, right?
I
think they would probably like to sign him, but they have to look at their salary cap, and we know that they have you know, players making the big bucks, namely Ovechkin and Backstrom, so we'll see if they can fit that under their salary cap. But, I mean, look at that right side of their defense, right? It's probably the best right side in the NHL with John Carlson there. So that was a pretty good move.
In your opinions, does the favorites for the Cup change at all? I asked that question to Michael Tracos going back to the first hour, about 2 hours ago. Anything change in terms of who you think is the favorites to win the Stanley Cup as a result of these moves? Does acquiring Martin Hanzel put the Minnesota Wild ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks or ahead of the San Jose Sharks in your mind if they weren't already there?
No, my personal feeling, I already had the Capitals as my Stanley Cup finals choice. So, I mean, I like what they did with Shattenkirk. So I still think that they are tops for the East. And I think that, you know, I think Minnesota made a nice move. I think they added some experience, you know, in the middle. And I think that's it's something that they'll need. But until you beat Chicago or San Jose, I still think those are the two teams that are, you know, the favorites.
Yeah, basically, Dave, until you get past the second round, right?
Right.
And we haven't seen the Minnesota Wild do that before. So I think, yeah, the Martin Hanzel acquisition was a good one for the Wild because they're already strong up the middle with Mikko Koivu and Eric Staal, and now Martin Hanzel is that perfect guy that you can slot in on the third line there. So I don't think much has changed, Drew. I think that I would say that the Capitals got better with the acquisition of Kevin Shattenkirk just because he's an elite offensive defenseman. But I still think that those are the favorites with the Penguins and the Capitals. So I don't necessarily know that I would say that they're the clear-cut favorite just because they acquired Kevin Shattenkirk. But those moves are more impactful than getting Ron Hainsey, Mark Strait. Let's be honest, Mark Strait, you know,
but
he's also 39 years old. This is probably one of his last years in the league. Kevin Shattenkirk's in his prime right now. So they're still the favorites to me, but certainly, you know, again, you know, John Carlson, Matt Niskanen, and Kevin Shattenkirk on your right side there. I mean, is anybody going to say that they don't have the best defense in the league, or at the very least, they have a top three defense in the league, and Braden Holtby's having another great season. So if the Capitals aren't the favorite, they've got to be second or third.
Who gets an L in your books?
What did the Islanders do?
The Islanders did absolutely nothing.
The Islanders and the Sabres
are the only teams that did nothing.
The Islanders are competing for a playoff spot, Drew, and I'm shocked that the Islanders were able to salvage this season. They didn't do anything. So I'm not sure what Garth Snow was doing, if his phone battery died or maybe if he just didn't want to make any moves. But for me, I mean, if you're competing for a playoff spot, shouldn't you do something?
It seems like a logical conclusion you would jump to there, that if you're on the verge of it, how well they've played to get back into the race, you would think that they would have wanted to. And there was talk that they were in on Matt Duchene, and obviously that didn't come to fruition. But you're absolutely right. They didn't do anything at all.
I would also say Colorado. And, you know, we just talked to Drew Spivak, but I think you got to get, I mean, if it's a sixth-round pick, seventh-round pick for guys like Fedor Tootin, John Mitchell, Rene Bork, this was a fire sale. They had to get rid of more players. They got rid of Iginla, and they got rid of Andreas Martinsson. But after that, I mean, you have a lot of guys that you know most likely aren't going to be on the roster next year in the following years, and I thought that they could have done more.
Dave, in 60 seconds, tell us who you hang a big L on.
No, I'm with Ezzy. I think that the Colorado Avalanche had to start getting rid of some of those players, to start accumulating more draft picks, and then giving those guys who do play for San Antonio a better shot at, you know, seeing what you have in the pipeline, number one. I thought the Kings were curious, right? Obviously, they made that lateral trade for goaltending, and you know, they moved out King and brought in Jerome Iginla, and they were hoping that he still has something left in the tank. So, you know, I think that the Kings, especially considering that they're on the bubble, I thought that they were a little bit curious. I thought they may have made a bigger move or a bigger splash, so I was a little surprised by them.
One of the Western Conference favorites is the San Jose Sharks. They'll be in Winnipeg to play the Jets on Monday night. Curtis Pashelka covers the Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Yeah! Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the San Jose Mercury News, he covers the San Jose Sharks. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Curtis Pashelka. Curtis, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you bet. Good morning to you.
Curtis obviously brought you on to talk about the Sharks. They're going to visit Winnipeg on Monday night to meet the Jets. San Jose currently atop the Pacific Division, trending nicely as we get closer and closer to the playoff spot. Made one move in the lead-up to the NHL trade deadline, acquiring Yannick Hansen from the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for prospect Nikolai Goldobin and a fourth-round pick. What were your thoughts about the Sharks' move in acquiring Hansen and maybe anything else that they chose not to do in the course of the trade deadline?
Well, I like the move. I think Hansen is not going to, you know, light up the scoreboard or anything. I mean, he had 22 goals last year. It's obviously a very nice year. But the Sharks could use a little bit more depth, I thought, you know, up front. They got a couple of young guys in the lineup right now. Kevin LeBanc comes to mind right now. He's on that top line with Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski. So I think the Sharks maybe felt that, you know, let's bolster up, get a little more of a veteran presence in there. We don't know where Hansen's going to play in the lineup right now, but I think I like the move just because he's so versatile. He kind of gives the Sharks maybe a little bit of what they're lacking, maybe a little bit more of an edge to their game. I think Hansen kind of can carry that, can bring that to you. And plus, just a variety of roles. I mean, he could play on a top line, he could play in a check line, he can kill penalties, just do a variety of different things. And so I like the move to bring him in. Goldobin is you know, has a bright future. It just didn't seem like, you know, at the moment he was going to be a fit for the Sharks. Kind of got passed up a little bit by a couple of their young wingers that are coming up to this system. So I like that move. And obviously the non-move they made was to choose not to bring in a more experienced backup goalie or a more NHL experienced backup goalie. They're going to stick with Aaron Dell for the rest of the regular season and into the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see how that turns out. But I think the Sharks like where they stand right now.
Curtis, Joe Thornton's struggles have been pretty well documented this year. He's got 5 goals and 40 points. That's coming off of an 82-point season and a playoffs in which he was almost at a point per game. How much concern do you think there is within the Sharks organization that, you know, Joe Thornton has been struggling a little bit offensively, and if there's a long playoff run in him again?
Do we lose Curtis? We may have just dropped Curtis there. He heard your question and he said, "That's it. He's had enough."
Yeah,
I'm never going to get a better question than that. I can't even answer that.
Mic drop and gone in that instance. So we're going to get Curtis back on the line. That just sort of happened abruptly there.
No, it's kind of interesting, right? We'll get Curtis back on, but you know, Joe Thornton is a guy that, you know, he's never going to be a 30-35 goal scorer. We know he gets more assists. That was maybe earlier in his career, but you know, 5 goals in 63 games, and
at least he's not getting just empty net goals anymore, as.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. It has been a down year for Joe Thornton. I wonder if that gives the Sharks some pause, as he's going to be a UFA at season's end, and what the ticket he's going to demand. So, Ezzy, why don't you continue with your question to Curtis. Curtis, now that we got you back on the line, I'm not sure if you heard Ezzy's question or if you lost the connection at that point in time.
Yeah, Curtis, it was just about Joe Thornton and you know, how he struggled. He's only got 5 goals in 62 games this year, and how much their concern there is in San Jose about that.
Yeah, there's a little bit of concern. I mean, obviously, you'd love to have him score a few more goals than what he already has. I think it's, you know, maybe a situation where, you know, playing in the World Cup, you know, playing for your country is a tremendous honor, a rare kind of prestigious honor that he got an opportunity to play in that. But you got to wonder, you know, how much that affected his normal routine as far as getting prepared for this season, and you know, coming off a long playoff run, you know, a short summer getting ready for this year, maybe that all kind of added up a little bit. But you know, I think they just want to get Joe, make sure he's, get him in a right frame of mind, get him in, you know, get him, you know, a little bit of rest when they can, as far as maybe cutting back in his minutes a little bit as we get closer to the playoffs. And you know, if he's able to do what he does, you know, on a normal basis, as far as setting up guys, making other guys better, being a force in that power play. I think one reason why the point totals are so low is because the power play has, you know, it's sort of middle of the pack right now, or maybe 20th in the league. And normally that's a top 10 power player, has been year in, year out for the better part of the last decade or so. So, you know, it's a little bit of a concern, but I think the Sharks will gladly take it if he's able to sort of turn it on here in March and get into the playoffs on a bit of a roll.
Curtis, they went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. They're comfortably in first in the Pacific right now, but nobody seems to be talking about the San Jose Sharks. Do the players play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, knowing that they're not really as well regarded, or maybe not as well as many people speaking about them as they are about the Minnesota Wild or the Chicago Blackhawks?
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's a fair point. I mean, here's a team that's got a lot of personality. Obviously, you know, Brent Burns, Joe Thornton, you know, Joe Pavelski's obviously had a very good career so far. Some other guys on that team kind of stand out. But you're right, it's a situation where maybe they're flying under the radar a little bit. People are pointing to, you know, maybe, you know, Minnesota's obviously having a very good year. Chicago seems to be doing pretty well. Edmonton kind of coming out of, you know, maybe exceeding expectations a little bit this year in the Pacific Division. So, you know, you got the Sharks and they were kind of, you know, maybe for the first half of the season, kind of, you know, up and down. But, you know, I think the last 6 weeks or so, I mean, they've shown that they can be just as good as they were kind of last year. Not saying that they're going to be going on a deep run again, but they're certainly putting themselves in a nice position. And so maybe that start had something to do with it. The fact that they kind of know, people weren't paying too much attention to the Sharks at that point. But I think as we get a little bit closer to the playoffs here, people will start to kind of look at them again and say, hey, can this team make another deep run? And they seem to be in a pretty good position to do that.
Curtis Pashelka, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Curtis covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, it seems pretty clear that he's going to win the Norris Trophy. That's, of course, Brent Burns. In your estimation, should he be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy? Should he be in the running for the Hart Trophy?
Well, I think he should be in the conversation for sure. I mean, if you look at the award, the player is most valuable to his. You know, you're not going to find too many more players who are valuable to their team as Brent Burns as the Sharks. You look at his production this year offensively. The Sharks are, 15th or 16th in the league in goals per game. He's got a hand in about 30 or 40% of those goals. So when it comes to offense, when it comes to, getting pucks to the net, creating chances, Brent Burns is as valuable to the Sharks as anybody. So just from that standpoint, I think he has to be in the conversation. Whether or not that actually happens, I don't know. I mean, obviously we've got some other very good candidates who are probably going to either Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby is going to win that award, or even a Devin Dubnyk might be getting in the mix there at some point. But I look at Brent Burns and say, if you're going to go strictly by the definition of what the Hart Trophy is, I think he definitely should be in the conversation. I'm like a win, but he might even be a finalist just the way he's playing so far.
Curtis, you mentioned the Sharks are kind of middle of the pack as far as goals for a game goes, but when you look at goals against per game, they're second only to the Pittsburgh Penguins, I believe it's the Washington Capitals. When you look at this group of defensemen, Paul Martin, we talked about Brent Burns, who's obviously the Norris favorite right now, but Mark-Edward Vlasic, a top shutdown defenseman in the league, Justin Braun, Brendan Dillon, and David Schlemko have been that third pair. Do the Sharks get enough credit for their top six, how good their top six defensemen are?
Well, it's interesting. A guy like Mark-Edward Vlasic, you mentioned him, he's flown under the radar his whole career, it seems like. And, you know, his the way he was able to shut down guys in the playoffs last year, I mean, you start with a guy like Tyler Toffoli in the first round and then go on to, Forsberg in the second round and then Tarasenko in the third round. That's when people started, well, I mean, there's a pattern here. It's not an accident that all these guys have struggled to put up points when they're matched up against Vlasic and Braun. So, I think those six guys have played really well. I think David Schlemko has added a little bit to this team as far as his ability to skate with the puck, to move the puck up the ice. I think that's been a huge upgrade over what they had last year. And also I think a greater commitment to team defense as well. I mean, these guys are used to playing these 3-2, 2-1 type games. And I think, obviously Martin Jones gets a lot of credit as well. But I think overall, I think the 60 have played well. I mean, they've been pretty much in the lineup every game so far this year. And I think also from a team perspective, there's been a real commitment to sort of play that sort of playoff style type hockey right from the get-go. I think they got blown out by Pittsburgh 5-0 in early November. And it kind of since that point, they've made it a conscious effort to really shut things down and try to limit chances against.
Curtis, you touched on it earlier about the power play, but, you know, one area they're outside the top 10 in both this power play and the penalty kill. Is the special teams the area they have to work on the most as they ramp it up towards the playoffs?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the penalty kill, and it's been really hit and miss, you know, lately, And it's not that they're taking a ton of penalties, but it's just that when they do get a behind, and they say in the first period if they're falling, if they're maybe don't quite have their legs to start off a game, and you take a penalty, early in the first period or midway through the first period, sometimes that's come back to haunt them a little bit. So I think that's definitely one area of concern as they look ahead here, is try to at least get some steady production. It's not going to at this point, it's probably not going to start the world on fire, but they certainly would like to see a little bit of improvement as go into the first round of the playoffs.
Curtis, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, it's been a bit of an injury-riddled season for Thomas Hertl. Since he's returned to the lineup, though, do the Sharks need more from him? Do they need more goal scoring from him? Hasn't been, I think he's got 4 goals since he returned in January, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, right. Yeah, he's kind of been, when he first came back, he played, you know, played the first 8-10 games with Pavelski and Thor on the top line, and they since moved him to the third line center role. I think, yeah, I mean, you kind of see some signs of him sort of maybe regaining a little bit of the form he had in the second half of last season, as far as creating chances, being hard on the puck, you know, winning battles along the wall, being responsible defensively. I think you're starting to see a little bit of that now. But you're right. I mean, the offense, it hasn't quite come along and maybe as much as he would like, but I think they're kind of in the same boat as Thornton. As long as he's kind of getting his game in the right spot as it heads towards the playoffs, I think the Sharks will be happy with that.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, thanks very much for your time. We'll do it again soon. Most everyone's anticipating a long playoff run for the Sharks, so I'm sure we'll be talking to you a lot in April and May as well.
All right, sounds good, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Curtis. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. Thanks. When we come back, we'll give an update on what's happening with the farm team. The Manitoba Moose play their second game in 3 nights tonight in Milwaukee. We'll touch on a Manitoba Moose update with Moose insider Dave Minyuk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
That funny, funny Dave Minyuk. If only the audience knew what was happening behind the scenes here at TSN 1290 Studios.
All chuckles.
All chuckles. They call you Chuckles McGee for a reason.
That's right.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. Of course, plenty of coverage to come here on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Avs. That's a 6 o'clock puck drop, which means H&L gets underway at 3. Rick Ralph and... Not you tonight? You're not in tonight, are you?
No, it's got to be Trevor JP. Or JP.
I think it's JP tonight.
JP was up on the Jumbotron yesterday. He was in the stands.
Oh, there you go. So I think it's Rick Ralph and JP Vigée with the pregame show tonight at 5. And then
I heard you a little bit yesterday, Drew, before the game because after the game I was in bed.
Yeah, you were in bed.
Shivering because I had the flu. Uh-huh. But I heard you before and you were doing a great job.
Thank you, Ezzy. That's very complimentary of you. I appreciate that. So, of course, the Jets and the Avs tonight. You can look forward to that here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to all of our guests on today's show. Of course, we started with Michael Trakos of Post Media. We are pleased to be joined by Jason Botterill, the associate GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins. That was a great conversation. In case you missed that, you should definitely download that on our website, illegalcurve.com, or get it on iTunes. And, of course, we also had Drew Spivak and Curtis Pashelka in this final hour. Quick programming note, NHL This Week, with the Jets game on Wednesday this week against the Penguins. NHL This Week will come to you Tuesday night at 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290, so you can look forward to that. A Tuesday night fill of NHL This Week. Dave, the Manitoba Moose, they went into Rockford last night, that lovely suburb of Chicago, and they defeated the Rockford, the Ice Hogs, by a 5-3 margin. They jumped out to an early 4-0 lead, got a little bit hairy there in the third period as the Ice Hogs staged a comeback, made it all the way to 4-3. But the Jets, the Moose, empty net goal by J.C. LaPon, his 7th of the year, gave the Moose a 5-3 victory. How about the play of Kyle Connor over the last 4 games? 10 points, 7 goals, 3 assists in his last 4 games, all victories for the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, the Moose have been playing very well. This is the second time this season. Now they have 4 wins in a row. They're 4-0-1 in their last 5, and they're beating teams that they need to beat. They've got a tough stretch right now. They play 3 games in 3 nights, including one tonight in Milwaukee.
The Admirals and then, tonight.
Yeah, and then tomorrow afternoon they play in Chicago. So not an easy schedule to play 3 games in 2.5 days, but these are young guys. They can handle the rigors of that sort of scheduling. Kyle Connor's been very good, and not just offensively. He seems to have gained a little bit of a full 200-foot game, which is the cliche that's used, but he really has been playing a better game. But the problem is, and one thing I try and stress is people need to understand that because he's playing well of late doesn't necessarily mean he's ready for the NHL. You have to let this guy, I mean, the whole point of draft and develop is to develop these players. So, you know, Jack Roslovic, Kyle Connor, Chase DeLeo, Dan DeSalvo even, and Brendan Lemieux, these guys are having, they're heating up of late, especially Jack Roslovic. I mean, he's really, his vision is getting to that next level. But again, you know, we see things in their games defensively that they still need to work on. They still need to be able to, and some of it is a function of just age. I mean, we saw it with Mark Scheifele when he first came in the league, and you know, he was slight and he was able to easily pushed off the puck, and that's what you see with some of these guys when they go up against big grizzled veterans in the NHL. You know, it would be hard for them to kind of assert their dominance. So, you know, they're learning the right way. But again, you have to watch these games. You have to see that a lot of times, like for example, last night, Kyle Connor scored two goals, but a lot of the work that was done for those two goals, JC LaPonne on his first goal kind of did a lot of the dirty work. And on the next one, I think it was Jack Roslovic dug it out for him and he put it home. And again, his offensive ability is really, really strong, but there's a lot to the NHL game that you have to learn. So I think it takes a lot of development.
And Dave, I think you make some good points there, and it's just nice to see these guys scoring goals because, as you mentioned, Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic, I mean, we know that the Jets want these guys to put some weight on because these aren't big players. These guys are offensive-minded players, so and that'll come over the next you know, 2-3 years. But, you know, Kyle Connor, you mentioned it, Drew, 10 points in his last four games. The Moose have won 4 in a row. They can win 5 in a row, and it's been a tough year, Dave. You've been to most of the games, and their biggest problem this year has been scoring goals, so Kyle Connor's putting the puck in the net. Dan DeSalvo's been a great player, a great story, and I know that you've written about it for the website, Dave, but a small player and a guy that, you know, turned a PTO into a contract with the Moose. So it's nice to see these bright spots for the Moose because, you know, it's going to be tough for them to get in the playoffs. They had that really rough stretch in January and into February, and so they're putting some wins together. So hopefully they can get into the playoffs here. But it's just nice to see guys like Connor, Roslovic, Chase DeLeo starting to put the puck in the net because these are guys that the Jets hope to see in the lineup, you know, next year, year after. And I agree with you. I mean, just because, you know, Kyle Connor goes on a heater doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be in the lineup next year, but this is what the Jets wanted, right? The Jets wanted these guys to play in the AHL. They wanted these guys to get confidence and play in primary scoring roles, right? And Roslovic and Connor, these are guys that are leading the Moose right now, and that's what you want to see.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, whatever you're going to say there.
No, I was just going to say, as he's right, I mean, the whole point is, do you want these guys playing fourth-line minutes or third-line minutes and, you know, sheltered, or do you want them playing in all scenarios, power play, penalty kill? Roslovic plays penalty kill, plays power play. Is he going to get that opportunity with the Jets? No, because the point is that the Manitoba Moose are a developmental organization, as is the AHL for the most part, and so you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, how am I going to get these players to get that opportunity? So, and that one player that we're not mentioning is Eric Comrie.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Any concerns from your perspective, Dave, that Eric Comrie's playing too many minutes right now for the Manitoba Moose?
No.
Too many games?
If you asked Eric Comrie, he would literally play every single game, and his conditioning is excellent. He is the quintessential pro. You know, we call Mark Scheifele a hockey nerd. I'd probably lump Eric Comrie into that. The guy's ability to analyze a game is unbelievable for his age, and you ask him about a play, he can break it down. He remembers absolutely everything that happens in a game, and better, good or bad. And he's very honest. He'll tell you, oh, you know, I made a mistake on this play. I should have done that. So his analysis of his own game is pretty strong, and his play is pretty good. And he's played 18, I think, of 20 games since Andre Pavlik got called up to the Jets. And Jamie Phillips got his first AHL win, so that was nice for him. He played a pretty good game the other day for the Moose. So they're getting a chance to see what he can do also, but they really want to ride Eric Comrie down the stretch.
You know, speaking of Eric Comrie, Dave, I mean, is there any doubt that he's been the MVP for this Moose team? Because
no.
the couple of games that I've seen this year, Eric Comrie has been fantastic. He's the number one goalie prospect for the Jets right now, and Jamie Phillips would be the number two goalie prospect. But I agree with Dave, and let's be honest, the defense in front of him is not a very good defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Manitoba Moose have struggled scoring goals, but they've also had trouble keeping it out of their own zone. So, pardon me, out of their own net. So, you know, Eric Comrie certainly has been, you know, the shining star for this Moose team this year.
And the one thing to, you know, listen to what Jason Botterill, the associate GM of the Penguins, said is he talked about how guys have turned within their organization because they have a very good AHL team. you know, they've turned AHL deals into NHL deals. And that's kind of the goal. Like, obviously, you know, drafting is important and you want to develop these players. But sometimes you can find that Dan DeSalvo, that potential diamond in the rough who you don't know what he's going to become. He could become something. Now, I'm not saying he's going to, but I'm just saying that you never know, right? And he was a guy who didn't have an AHL deal, held out, got his AHL deal, and he's played well. So, I mean, again, do I say that he's going to convert into an NHLer? No, but I'm saying that that's the opportunity you want to see in your organization. So, you know, the Moose have turned a corner of late. You know, like I said, they're 4-0-1 in their last five. They could go on a bit of a run. They've got eight games, I believe, starting after Sunday here at MTS. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for folks around here to see them. They've got the Retro Night, which I have to say, you know, is always fun, as he was at last year's Retro. And it's pretty cool when you kick it back to the 90s and you have some of the team that works for the Moose does a very good job.
The production crew. The game day crew.
Yeah, led by Lindsay, and they have just an excellent crew there, and they really do a first-rate job.
Do I get my hairline from the 90s back? That would be fantastic.
You won't get your hairline, but no, they will do some like really neat, like we heard Blades of Steel last night on the organ,
but
they do a lot of that real neat stuff in the production. So
Jake Baker, anybody got more frequent flyer miles than this guy?
No, every
day I get an email that he's been either sent up or sent down to the ECHL or brought back up to the Moose.
But again, Jake Baker is another example of a young player that they want to get time, and he's not going to get time right now with the Moose, so they want to give him some opportunity with the ECHL to play some minutes.
That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine Winnipeg businesses because they make the Illegal Curve Hockey Show a reality. Big thank you to our guests, Curtis Pashelka, Drew Spivak, Jason Botterill, and Michael Trakos. In case you missed any of those interviews or any of the show in general, it's available for download on iTunes and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and as I said, the website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board as always, for Dave Minuke and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Winnipeg Jets hockey later this afternoon here on TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together, the team will be all right.